Is it time to reimagine your future? The right business skills may make a difference in your career. At Capella University, we offer a relevant education that's designed to focus on what you need to know in the business world. We'll teach professional skills to help you pursue your goals, like business management, strategic planning, and effective communication. And you can apply these skills right away. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
First up, we'll look at some of the business stories in the stays in this morning's newspapers and online. And delighted to be joined by Ronan Reid of Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland and Louisa Meehan from Woodview HRM. Good morning, one and all. How are we doing?
Good morning.
Good, thanks.
It's bright and blustery out there, Ronan. 140 knots recorded in Galway. 70 knots in Wicklow overnight. It's windy.
Not for the faint-hearted.
No. I thought I might start with the two editorials in the Irish Times and Independent today, because really what they're doing is, I suppose, giving us a synopsis of where we are now politically and what's likely to happen next. Let's start with the Irish Times.
Sure. I think both editorials comment but don't really call it. I was looking at Joe Brennan's article about Trump and about basically selecting his team, and a number of his appointees have failed. The DA, chap for DA, Matt Gaetz for Attorney General. Now, I've got a declared interest, as you say, Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland. So my boss, my ultimate boss, is one of the nominees for Commerce Secretary. But he's selecting his team, and there's a constant focus for me on Trump 2.0 and what it's going to do. I mean, a lot of people talk about tariffs. They talk about other difficulties that will arise dealing with immigration. Markets fear that'll be inflation, because price of goods coming in will be higher and effectively less workers in the workforce. So that as well could drive up inflation. But markets still press ahead, and I think that's the comment that everybody has. But it's dominated by seven technology stocks. I mean, I think the world's looking at a different place, where Europe's behind in technology, and that's a technology war probably fought between China, India and the States. It's seven stocks dominated. It's all the usual, Nvidia, Microsoft, Tesla and others. And markets are up 5% since Trump was elected. And I don't believe it's a positive Trump necessarily. It's probably just reflecting a weak Democratic Party for a period of time. And that's what it has. At least they know Wall Street has liked Republicans, but they know what they'll be getting over time. And I think the market is up like 6% since Trump pulled ahead in the polls, $140 billion invested. But people are really wondering, and if we get geopolitics is really where it plays, and the potential for shock. I think Joe makes a great point, which is if Trump gets it wrong, he tends to blame somebody else and change direction very quickly. My boss is a tough man. he's a survivor, and he builds a business impressively. Some of the candidates, I mean, a lot of criticism. Scott Bissent is fairly sensible as the call of Treasury. He would know markets. Chris Wright, Howard, I'd naturally be biased on my own boss. He's very entrepreneurial. And then some of the more challenged candidates aren't getting elected. They're falling by the wayside.
It's interesting as well that, you know, Trump is actually so focused on using, you know, the stock exchange as a barometer of his performance.
Yeah, I mean, they always say it's about the economy, stupid. Yeah. Like, you know, and it's not really a barometer, because they actually, I mean, he is the MAGA, Make America Great, but they actually called him the Mag 7. It's seven stocks that contribute to about 80% of the gains in that market, and they're invariably exporting their technology overseas. So,
and the S&P 500 up 28%, big bounce for the average company, I think, is at 23 times earnings.
Yeah, like it's expensive. By long-term norms, that is expensive. But people are scared to go into bonds because they're afraid that bonds will fall in price if we have more inflation. So I think you're just seeing the regular institutional investment flowing into equities fairly steadily. It's just a period of uncertainty. And I think till we see the policies and the approach, and also the reaction of others on the geopolitical side, is fairly significant.
Okay. Yeah. Louisa, can I bring you back to matters closer to home? I mentioned there the editorials in the Irish Times and indeed the Irish Independent laying out the landscape for us politically. What do you make of the synopsis of both editorials?
They're not the strongest synopsis, shall we say. I mean, look, they're certainly calling it that it's going to be Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Who's going in with them is up for grabs. It would seem that...
The love-in with the Sog Dems and the Labour Party clearly over.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. That they were trying to create a bit of a coalition on their own. That's not going to happen.
Long.
So really, I think what's most likely, based on what's here, is that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are going to be with either the Social Democrats or with Labour. The independents are still there floating around in the background, but they're really complicated because not alone do you have to negotiate with them collectively, you have to negotiate with them individually.
I still think they're easier to negotiate with the ones that they've picked out than either Labour or the Sog Dems. And, you know, the ones that they're negotiating with are people that have supported coalitions before.
Exactly. So they know what they're doing.
There's nothing really, there's no real radicals in there that are likely to...
Do you know, I think having talked about Trump, one thing that's for sure is... we're in for a more stable, calm, maybe slightly boring, but a more stable, calm political sphere. And I think this the piece in The Independent is actually more interesting because it's focusing in on all of those amazing promises that were made by all of the parties in relation to all of the billions that they were going to spend on us. And the state spending watchdog is basically coming out and giving them a little bit of a slap on the wrist, saying, OK, now that you've got through the election, can you rein in your spending?
Well,
and can you make it more...
ignored the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council.
They have.
And to a point where its relevance needs to be questioned.
I also think that if you have you also need strong opposition. Government works well with a strong opposition. If you had one dominant, if you had a Sog Dem and Labour in government, you would only have Sinn Féin in opposition. I always think it's better to have two parties.
Yeah.
And we can talk about the States and talk about Ireland. Look at France. Like, you know, you had the far right and the very left united to throw out the government.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and real crisis in France. And that's...
Unthinkable can happen.
Yeah, well, geopolitics, everybody for their own. Like, you know, it's no different than all the tariff and all the other debate and the free trade debates. And it's difficult. I mean, I think Sog Dems, it would have been interesting because I'd love to see the demographic of the vote because they seem to have an incredibly good young appeal.
Yeah.
And I think that in opposition, that's a good thing to give a voice as well.
Interesting as well that the piece in The Independent is I suppose it's the final paragraph quotes the American political satirist P.J. O'Rourke saying, "I'm not sure I learned anything except that giving money and power to governments is like giving whiskey and car keys to teenage boys."
Yeah, look, I have one teenage boy and one soon-to-be teenage boy at home, so I'm hoping he's not drinking whiskey and driving the car.
No, you do not want that.
I do not want that.
But that just shows, you know, what the thinking is here.
Yeah,
it does.
And how reckless it all is. Roland, can I know you're not a man steeped in agriculture, but I wanted to think what you thought about the latest deal, this Mercosur trade deal and what it means for Ireland. The Irish Mail is telling us that it's a real disaster for farmers because effectively we're going to have to uphold these standards in the EU and this cheap beef, has some spurious credentials is going to be flooding the market.
I think they focus both on the green aspects of it in terms of, like, you know, in South America, the very large ranches, deforestation in order to create them. So therefore, and they say the beef is lower quality. So I understand the perspective. The other side, though, is this trade deal has been in the offing for years. And this goes back to Brexit, goes back to Trump, everybody trying to create...
20 years.
Yeah, trying to create free trade blocks. Well, I did laugh because they said the Germans are going to export cars. I thought they weren't making any cars anymore in Germany in the last 2 years. So I think part of it is trade is it's the classic of, like, we should have free trade deals and that'll make us more effective, but just don't impact us on some point.
Yeah.
We do export beef, and if the quality is good, some of it should hold its side.
I didn't realise that we're the fifth largest beef exporter in the world.
90% of what we produce is exported. Yeah. So, and the quality is really
right
high. But when it comes to large trade deals, they have to do trade deals because the world is talking about tariffing. Like, you know, what happens when Trump puts some tariffs, well, then somebody else follows through. And Europe is really falling behind. It needs some trade deals as such. If you looked at the performance of economies, it's the weaker performing economy significantly, and it is quite exposed. So post-Brexit, everybody was trying to set up trade deals, and this would have accelerated. But they're saying that this has gone ahead without the necessary support, so might be a little bit longer. It's been 20 years, might be a bit longer before it's put in place.
Yeah, and at $4 billion, it's the biggest trade deal ever negotiated by the EU, Louisa.
Yeah, look, I would agree. I think the trade deals are really important, and we need to be very careful that we don't focus in on beef as a reason to stop a trade deal proceed. And there's something that's missing, actually, in both of these articles, which is, if we look certainly from an Irish perspective, and I'm sure it's the same across most of Europe, but if we look from an Irish perspective, and I work with companies that sell food into the large retailers have extensive auditing in place in relation to the quality of the food products that they sell within their supermarkets. So we don't need to worry so much about opening up trade, but we do need to worry about putting in proper regulation in terms of what beef comes into the country. And if we are taking beef in, it needs to be held to at least the same standard as the beef that is created in this country. And then if there is an issue, then that's an issue with the cost of farming in this country, and it's a different economical issue that we have to address separately.
And you think that the Irish retailers, the big multiples, will protect us from that because of their standards?
Well, look, I've seen it where clients that I work with who supply into the retailers, I see the audits that they go through and the standards that they're held to. And I can tell you that firsthand that they are exceptionally high standards.
Ronan, the acquisition of Pelco by Circle K referred to the consumer watchdog. Anything to see here?
Yeah, I just thought it was an incredibly small transaction.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're talking about Circle K will go from 168 stores to 177, and they're already in 419 different service stations. So I'm not sure, like, full investigations of that are really expensive.
Yeah.
Like, you know, why, and I was going, why? Like, yeah, you know, Circle K is a good global supplier. It's a big entity. Like, it just struck me as, in a sector that has very large players, what is the relevance? Unless they're putting a marker down that they don't want any others growing further. But it just looked an incredibly small deal to refer.
Guinness are managing the UK supplies. This is good and bad news for Guinness. Good news in that the drink is now accounting for one in every 9 pints pulled in Britain. So it's, but they're, I think, struggling to meet supply.
They do seem to be struggling to meet supply. And this is something I'd actually heard during the week in relation to Guinness. And I suppose it's one of those products that has a relatively short shelf life. So they have to produce it to demand. Christmas is an incredibly high demand period. So maybe it's a blip in the calendar as opposed to a long-term piece. The most interesting piece in the article here from Alan Healy is actually talking to the 200 million euro new brewery that's being set up in Newbridge. And whilst they're not necessarily focusing on Guinness, they're going to be doing Rockshore, Harp, Hop, etc. They are freeing up space for Guinness to be produced when those products are taken out. So it's a good news story for Ireland. It's a product that we are absolutely renowned with. It's a worldwide expansion and people are liking it more. I have to say, as an Irish person, I've never fully understood it. I live with people who love it. I'm a supporter of Guinness. I just would rather not drink it.
Ronan, I didn't realise they were still making Harp. Apparently that's one of the...
Harp brings me back to the 1970s and 80s. A pint of Harp.
Well, people used to put lime in it.
They put lime in it, and if you were really bold, you'd make a snake bite. But you'd have to be old to remember those. I didn't realise we still do. And the other side in trade deals is, remember, things like Guinness benefit over time. Because we're talking about tariffs, and I thought, in the case, it's the fastest selling beer in the US, imported beer in the US, Guinness is,
which
still
is a really good place for it to be.
Oh yeah.
And like, the US market is absolutely colossal.
Well, beers had slowed down because younger people felt it was less fattening to drink whiskey, and whiskey and other spirits grew, like gin, vodka, and particularly whiskey grew a lot. But Guinness itself is. I did wonder for a little while. I know there is a shortage, but was it like Cadbury cream eggs when people used to say at Easter, "Oh, there isn't a supply"?
Yeah, you create one by talking about it.
Yeah.
What about these? I was really surprised to read this story. It's in all the papers today about the high costs for some credit card holders. Apparently 1 in 3 credit card holders are paying extortionate rates, and many of them don't know that they can get a cheaper rate.
No, and I mean, look, the first thing I thought when I read the story was, oh, I don't know what my rate is. It's within the large banks, so I'm fairly confident it's within the legal limits because of the level of regulation. A new piece of legislation was brought in 2022, and the basic level is that they cannot have APR rates of above 23%. And what the consumer protection group are saying is that around 400,000 are still on APRs that are higher than 23%. They're criticising the lenders in terms of taking very minimal effort to inform consumers in relation to what it is they're paying and how to change,
etc. Does that mean that this credit card debt goes back a while? As in, it's people that never really got to pay it off.
It goes back to 2022.
Before this new legislation came in. So it's old debt that was never serviced, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it is. It's historically, we actually as a country don't run huge credit card balances when you compare it to others. I mean, we were chatting about it beforehand and people would say, hey, give me some investment advice. I used to say to people, yeah, pay down your credit card.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you've got excess cash. I think it's 80 or 90% of banks' loans in this country are funded by current accounts, not by deposit accounts, by current accounts. So a lot of people sit with cash and they don't pay down. But I also thought in the two articles, there were two points. Firstly, I'd like to see better journalism. Like, you know, don't give out about it. Put down what 10 different cards cost.
Yeah.
And that and education helps. And the other part is on your credit card statement is right at the top, have interest paid year to date. So you can see a number and that'll motivate change. Like, you know, if you want to motivate change, whether you're the regulator or whether you're the credit card company.
But maybe change doesn't suit the provider here.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And therefore, they should. But legislation, you have to show them change and stuff. Show the number that you're paying. I think if everybody saw at the top, I'm paying X in interest this year and X in charges, you go, oh, I don't want to. Credit cards have a relevance. We were talking about it earlier on insurance and other stuff when you purchase goods and when you're online. But still in all, paying down regularly, it makes an awful lot of sense.
It does. And if you need to get a loan, get a small loan from a credit union or from a bank, the interest rates will always be more favourable.
Lastly, Louisa, Matt Cooper's writing about sit down and enjoy the game, leave the drinking till after.
Yes.
He's talking about a recent experience that he had in the Aviva. People going to the bars during the match, people wanting to go out to the loo, basically ruining his game.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a really simple article, and he's talking about the IRFU, he's talking about rugby, suggesting that if it was in Croke Park, you wouldn't be allowed to bring your drinks back. But he's also talking about concert goers and people going to concerts, drinking, talking, and not necessarily
and
appreciating
being on their phones,
the, lose,
which
the music.
Is the thing. Yeah.
And actually, he doesn't directly say this, but what struck me in reading it is I'm wondering if what he's actually getting to is that the real people are not getting to go to these events. The people who are fans, the people who are committed to rugby, committed to the music, but it's actually the people who can afford to go and can afford to get the tickets because they have become incredibly difficult to get and incredibly expensive.
But like one of the things here is if the IRFU, Ronan, sell pouring rights to Guinness, the quid pro quo is that Guinness need to get sales.
They need to get sales.
So you can't talk out of both sides.
I actually remember when Croke Park, I don't know, American football game won before last, and they were ridiculously high price tickets. But they ran out of drink and the machines didn't work and they had to give away drink for free at the time.
That was at the American football game.
Yeah. And now American football is like that. If you go to baseball, American football, and people walk in and out all the time. I haven't found it as disruptive in the rugby. I go to it and I haven't seen it. I was standing beside chatting to Matt. We were at the RFU dinner and they did run out of Guinness, or the Guinness wasn't working. And
there's a shortage of Guinness, guys.
Yeah. Right.
No, we'll leave it there. Ronan Reid, Cantor Fitzgerald, Ireland. And Louisa Meehan, Woodview, HRM, thank you very much for joining us this morning and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
At Capella University, learning the right skills could make a difference. That's why our business programs teach you relevant skills you can take from the courseroom to the workplace. A different future is closer than you think with Capella University. Learn more at capella.edu.